Going Linux, episode 162. What's different with Mint 12? Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your chief executive minion, Bill. Whether you're new to Linux, moving from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about upgrading to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
We hope that you'll find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
In today's episode, what's different? Mint 12.
Hey, Bill, I know you've been talking to Tom and he's feeling better. We mentioned that on the last episode, but black mold?
Yeah, apparently he had some black mold, and so anybody that is wondering why they're not feeling good, you might want to see if there's some black mold in your air conditioner.
Wow. Yeah, he was sounding really bad and feeling really bad, and you wouldn't think a little mold spore would do that to you, but I understand that stuff is really, really dangerous. So we're glad he's got that cleaned up and is beginning to feel better, and hopefully he'll be back with us in the regular host seat in a couple of weeks, which will be about the right time for our next episode, or maybe the one after that. But either way, it'll be good to have Tom back. Not that you've been doing a bad job. You've been doing a fantastic job, Bill. I really want to have you on the show a little more.
I appreciate that. Yeah, he is sounding a lot better. And I think he's chomping at the bit to get back. I think he's missed it. But anyway, so I got to ask you, what have you been doing?
You remember in the last episode, I talked about my clock that ran off of a 64 megabyte SD card.
I do.
Well, I changed it yet again.
It'd still be cheaper and faster to buy a clock.
Oh, I don't know. I added an external hard drive.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And I actually installed Ubuntu 10.10. Mm-hmm. And have it running from the external hard drive because I didn't want to interfere with my wife's setup on the netbook on its internal hard drive. So I've got it booting to that external hard drive. It still day-to-day shows the clock. Okay, so it's basically a clock. However, my intent here is to make it a media center.
Oh, no.
Yes. And my wife has... for Christmas, she's tending towards the fruit flavored computers, Apple. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she loves Linux and she likes the security around Linux and so on. But she wants something even simpler. Something she doesn't mind being locked down because she doesn't really use a lot of the features anyway. Mm-hmm. So she wants something that is a lot more intuitive, a little less geeky in setup and stuff that I don't have to tweak all the time, basically. So I think her next computer will probably be a Mac laptop or something like that. But she's still using an HP with Linux Mint on it. But in the meantime, she has an iPad and an iPhone, the most recent ones. So she wants to be able to print from her iPad. And I don't know if you know anything about the iPad, but the only way you can print from an iPad, even with a networked printer, is to use a wireless network printer, but not just any wireless printer. Oh no, this is Mac. You have to have something special. It has to be a wireless network printer with something called AirTime.
Yes, I've heard of that.
And what AirTime is just a different way of configuring wireless Ethernet. But specific for this iPhone and iPad printing. So there is a Linux driver. It's not a driver. It's a Python script that sets up cups and does the... there may be a driver in there as well, but there's some configuration that this Python script does, and I'll add that to the show notes and links so that folks have that. I can find it. I actually found it on the Mint forum, how to get that set up so that you don't have to go out and buy a new printer from HP that has AirTime. You can make any network shared printer on any computer an airtime printer. The disadvantage is you have to have a computer connected to the printer and share it from that computer, which this little netbook sitting on the top of the TV acting as a clock most of the time is perfect for that. I just realized that I've been calling this thing AirTime all along. The actual name is AirPrint.
Okay.
So I spent yesterday setting that up, and it works like a charm. She can print from her iPad, and she can print from her iPhone, and she's happy.
So you've gotten the spousal approval, which is very important.
Yes.
Okay. So let me tell you what I've been up to. And okay. I've been playing with Fedora 16 and Pingai OS Beta, which is they're calling their final.
Okay.
And
final beta.
Fedora 16 was surprisingly good. It used the GNOME 3 desktop, but the only thing I always had problems with Fedora was getting all the DVD codecs, the MP3, and Skype and Dropbox. I mean, I've been able to do it, but I'm sitting here, you know, Googling every one, trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
Well, until I run across something called Auto Plus, and I included the link in the show notes. This is, you open a terminal, you paste this one line, you type your password, and it installs the program. And then from there, it is a easy install. It's for a nice graphical user, and it just installs everything. And I had it up and running without any problems. So I thought that was excellent. It's made just for Fedora, and I will probably end up going back to Fedora. I was just testing out this Pingai OS. It's a little rough around the edges, and he tells you it is, but, you know, I'm always cruising for a bruising, as my wife says.
Well, that's why they call it beta.
Yeah, beta. But I will have to say, so I don't sound like a Ubuntu or Linux fanboy.
All right.
That Fedora 16, if you're new to Linux or you're just a little more technical savvy, give it a try. You might be surprised how nice it is.
Okay.
And one last thing, you know that my ebook reader that I was talking about last show, it broke. I had to take it back. And when I was there, they were very nice about it. I was talking to them, and I ended up giving them some more money, and I got their Nook tablet, which is an Android-based multimedia tablet. And I have to say, for one-third the price of an iPad, it does everything I want.
Nice.
And surprisingly, it has all the codecs, including OGG, and so it supports it right out of the box, which I thought was pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's great. Well, if it were Linux and it didn't support OGG out of the box, I'd be worried about it.
Okay.
Like the first netbooks.
Yes, yes. I actually saw one of those first ones. It was the little EPCs.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, before we start, let me give you a general overview.
Okay.
Okay. Do you know who actually is in charge of GNOME?
Yeah, there's a GNOME Foundation, I believe.
Okay. And do you know when it was started?
I don't.
Okay, the GNOME project was started in 1997 by two university students, Miguel and Federico. And I'm not going to try to pronounce their last name.
Okay.
But they basically wanted to create a free desktop that was easy to use and you could customize. And so basically that's how the GNOME desktop that we know and love got started.
Yeah.
And where all these new, where, you know, Unity's built upon it, GNOME 3's built upon it. So when did Unity first appear? Do you know?
Unity was in Ubuntu 10.04, if you count the netbook remix. And then officially in mainstream Ubuntu, I think it was 10.10.
Okay. And now, how similar is the GNOME 3 to the Unity as far as, are they compatible or are they, I mean, I know they've done some work on them.
Yeah, Compatibility, I don't think they're compatible so much as they have a lot of similar features. I think they're implemented very differently. I think Canonical decided that Unity would be something. They wanted to go in their direction because GNOME 3 didn't meet the requirements. And so they are different, and they're implemented differently. But they, to the casual user, you can tell which is which, but they have such similar features that for someone moving to Linux for the first time, you'd think it was just some customization differences between the two. So they have a dock that in Unity comes out from the left-hand side, or on GNOME 3 appears on the left-hand side. Not so much pops out like it does with Unity, but it appears as you can cause it to appear by going to the upper left corner, for example. It has a panel at the top and no panel at the bottom by default. In Linux Mint, we'll get into that in a second, but they've added a bottom panel. GNOME 3, you can't add a bottom panel without extensions and so on. We'll get into that as well. But in Unity, they are using Compiz for their 3D graphic whizbang eye candy. And in GNOME 3, I'm not sure they're using Compiz. I think they're using the GNOME 3D effects by default. So those are some of the things that I think I know, at least some of the things that I've observed or heard about. I haven't dug too deeply into the differences between the two. What's your perspective?
Well, my perspective is when I was just doing some research about this Unity interface, I ran across some Mark Shuttleworth's blog. Mm-hmm. And he wants to use the Unity interface on televisions, on tablets, and everything. I think he has a bigger idea of what he wants Ubuntu on. And so I think the Ubuntu Unity interface was made for touchscreens.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It really looks that way when you take a look at it on the screen.
But the only thing is, I don't see a lot of other distributions using it. I know they can, but I'll give you an example. Fedora Linux and OpenSUSE both use the GNOME 3.
Yeah.
And so I don't see many people adopting it beyond Ubuntu. And, you know, I think, hey, if you're going to be on TVs and tablets and stuff, it's important to have a touch interface. As you can see, I think the new Windows 8 is going to have something similar.
Yeah.
Not exactly similar, but they're going to be touch-centric. But overall, I don't know how that's going to affect the desktop computing. I know a lot of people are not happy with Unity, and to move into talking about what Mint's done, a lot of people have went to Mint because they wanted a more GNOME 2 experience. So yeah. Larry, let's go and see what the Mint distribution has done differently from Ubuntu. So
yeah, okay, well, let's talk a little bit about some of the similarities between GNOME 2, which is the old version of GNOME on both Ubuntu and Linux Mint, and the way things are implemented in Mint 12, which is not straight out of the box GNOME 3, but it's built on GNOME 3. So some of the similarities with Linux Mint version 12, where they have implemented the GNOME 3 with the Mint GNOME extensions, which is how they've allowed it to look a lot more like your experience with GNOME 3, like the bottom panel and so on. Mm-hmm. Here are some of the things that they've done with those Mint GNOME extensions. They've added the Mint menu. So there's a panel at the bottom, and there's a menu icon in the lower left-hand corner, the equivalent of Microsoft Windows Start button and the familiar menu button in Mint. It's there, and that's controlled by an extension. There's also the bottom panel itself, which contains a window list. So by default, GNOME 3 shows you in the top panel which application has the focus. In other words, if you have two let's say, Firefox windows open, two separate windows, not two tabs, but two separate windows, the panel at the top will show you that Firefox has the focus. It won't tell you which of the two windows it is, whereas the bottom panel and the window list from Mint shows you that there are indeed two Firefox windows open, and it shows you which of the two has the focus. So it is more the traditional window list.
On the earlier Unity interface, when an update would come up, it would steal the focus from what you were doing. Have they solved that problem as far as in the Mint, you know, when something comes up and says, you know, you need updates or whatever, does it steal the focus? Because it did that to me a few times.
Yeah.
That's annoying.
I don't know. I haven't really looked at it that way. I have seen some of the updates. Usually what I do is when the update window comes up, I just click on go ahead and update and then go on doing my work, because unlike with Windows, where when you do updates you have to restart, with Linux you typically don't. So there's no harm in having it go ahead and do the updates, unless you're doing something processor or memory intensive, like recording a podcast. You don't want to be doing updates while you're doing that.
Well, hasn't Tom's done that once or twice?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's Tom. He just loosens those bolts at 30,000 feet. So
yeah, it's great.
Yeah. So I honestly don't know. Next time it happens, I'll let you know.
Well, if you haven't noticed, then they probably fixed it. I know I was writing an email, and this was in 11:04.
Yeah.
And immediately this thing pops up and it takes me over there, and I'm like, I'm trying to concentrate on what I'm doing here first.
Yeah.
So, you know, the stealing focus, I know it was an issue, but I wonder, you know, how Mint addressed that.
Yeah, I think that's a more of a GNOME 3 thing than it is a Mint thing.
Okay.
But as things go with Linux distributions, sometimes the distribution, like Mint, fixes the problem, and then it goes upstream to GNOME or the Linux kernel or whatever the fix is applied to. So it could very well be that one of the distributions using GNOME 3 has fixed it and pushed it upstream to the GNOME project, and then it becomes available to everybody. But I can't swear that it's fixed. I don't know. I haven't noticed.
Well, I was reading about the GNOME 2 and GNOME 3, and I found some interesting facts about it, and I'll just see what you think. The GNOME 2 use what they call MetaCity as its default window manager, and GNOME 3 uses something called Mutter as its default window manager. And I just have to say, Mutter's a great name. In GNOME 3, the GNOME shell replaces the GNOME panel that was used in the GNOME 2 desktop. And so it's interesting that Mint uses the extensions to give you they're still using the Mutter and their window manager, but they're able through the extensions to have a more GNOME 2.
Yeah.
And you can turn them on and off, so you can adjust it how you like, which I thought was really nice. If you wanted a more GNOME 2 desktop,
right,
you could have all the Mint extensions, or if you want something a little more GNOME 3, you could turn some of them off, but you could always have that middle ground if you wanted, which I thought was really nice. It helped ease, I think, people into the new desktop.
Right, and on that favorites list on the sidebar in Mint and on GNOME 3, at least on Mint, they have the extensions as one of the favorite icons set up for you, so that you can go right there. It's actually labeled Advanced Settings.
Yeah.
And when you go there, you end up looking at the on-off switches for each of the extensions. So that's quite handy to have them there. And in a few minutes, we'll be talking about additional extensions and how to get them added to your GNOME 3 experience. But while we're on the subject of those extensions, another extension that the Mint folks added to make it a little more pleasant experience for those people moving over from Windows or from previous versions of Linux Mint or from just about any previous version of any other Linux operating system. In GNOME 3, by default, when you click in the upper panel on your name, the me menu or whatever you want to call it, You would expect that there would be something there that would allow you to shut down.
Oh, yeah.
No. It no? says suspend.
Oh, I think, okay.
Yeah, and in order to get shut down to appear, you have to hold down the Alt key as you click. So what Linux Mint has done is they've created a Mint GNOME shell extension that puts the shutdown there by default.
that makes sense.
It I mean, does.
But the only crazy thing about that, Larry, is if you had just installed say Fedora, and you didn't know which button to push to turn it to shut it down, that'd be crazy.
Yeah, well, and that it was very disconcerting for folks when GNOME 3 first came out. How do you shut this thing down? Where's the manual? <You know?
laughs> Well, that you're right. That should have just always had a shutdown. I mean, really, having to hit a key combination to get the shutdown. I mean, what were they thinking?
Yeah, yeah. And the last thing is the Alt Tab switcher. So I don't know about you, but I liked in CompIz the ability to use the super key and tab to do a fancy animated switching between windows. And with GNOME 3 and with Mint out of the box, it has the standard Alt tab that kind of shows you a line of icons, basically. Well, with GNOME 3, by default, what it does is it shows you not the windows you have open again, but the applications. So if you have two Firefox windows open, it will only show one Firefox icon. Now, you hover over or click on that icon and it allows you to switch between the two windows, but that's an extra click. With the Mint GNOME Shell extension in place, it will allow you, when you click on Alt Tab, to switch in the classic way between the individual windows, and it will list all of the windows you have open.
As we're talking about these Mint extensions, I've just come to realize there is a big difference in how the two distributions are run. Mm-hmm. Mint is more community-driven. I mean, I know they say Ubuntu is, but they have a big company behind them called Canonical.
Yeah.
But Mint seems to take what people want and put it into effect. You know, like the shutdown window and the Alt tab, and I mean, it's little stuff like that that people are used to, and the Mint team seems to be more receptive to give people what they want.
Yeah, I would agree with that assessment as well. I think when Ubuntu first started up, Canonical first started it, Mark Shuttleworth was at the helm of the company, it was very responsive to the community. I think it is still, to some degree, responsive to the community. But it, as you observed, it's driven by a company, and they have a direction they want to take their distribution, which, of course, is their right. And so it is more like a Red Hat in that it is driven by the corporation. They have some specific goals. They want to make some money with this, and they have a plan for doing that. And that plan includes some very specific things that they need to do with their Linux distribution. Of course, they want to keep it as close to the community as possible, so they take community input, but they don't always use it. I think Linux Mint, on the other hand, although it's based on Ubuntu, they are a community distribution. They are very much driven by the comments from the community, the questions and suggestions from the community. And I think Clem actively searches out those comments and is asking the community, how do you want this to work? And, you know, no one can please everybody all the time. So there will always be some members of the community that their preferences aren't chosen. But I think it's a little more democratic with Mint than it is with Ubuntu.
Well, I will say a couple things about that I like about them, that Linux Mint distribution. One, I've actually sent an email to Clem, and you know, I figure not, you know, he's not going to respond to me. He actually took the time and responded to me and answered my questions, which, I mean, I don't know about you, but that's pretty awesome. I don't think Mark Shuttleworth would want to respond to some average Joe.
Yeah, I understand what you mean.
And I've run Linux Mint, and the more you talk about it, the more I think I might just have to install it on my computer. Oh no, we're sounding like a total fanboy. But I do like Clem and the Mint team they really seem to have a direction and a focus, and it just shows in their Mint extensions. And if you look, they're funded by donations for the most part. They do have some revenue sharing. I think they just changed it to like a DuckDuckGo or something. I'm not sure. But they seem to be making more in donations because I guess they're doing what people want and people like it, and so they're supporting it. I mean, apparently Clem's is paid full-time to work on that, and that's with no company behind them. And I think shows how people appreciate these Mint extensions.
Oh, absolutely. And... you know, it's not unheard of that the developer of a distribution will comment directly back to the to someone asking them a question. So I think that just speaks to the community atmosphere around Linux Mint. It's just it's a nice place to be. That's
it is.
For sure. Now, one of the questions that, and I apologize, I've forgotten which listener asked this, but what's the difference between GNOME Shell and GNOME 3? Do you have any idea?
If I say no, am I going to be thrown off the show?
No, not at all, because I had to look it up myself.
I know that... the GNOME shell replaces the GNOME menu.
Yeah.
And I know Mutter is the window manager, but other than that, I don't.
Yeah. Okay. So GNOME 3, GNOME is the graphical user interface, and GNOME shell is the user interface part of GNOME 3. So GNOME 3 is the graphical environment, the desktop, but GNOME Shell is the user interface. It's what you see when you're using GNOME 3. So there's a lot of back-end stuff that GNOME 3 does in terms of managing files through Nautilus, if that's what you're using as your file manager, and all the interfaces to all the applications. But the shell is the user interface. It's what you see and interact with.
And isn't it written in something called GTK3 or something? Is that
I believe so, but I can't swear. I'm not.
Well, the reason I was just wondering, KDE's written in what they call QT.
Yeah.
And so I think it's not really important. I just, I think that was a trick question, actually.
Yeah, I know it's written in GTK. I don't know whether it's okay. GTK3 or a combination of that and some of the other stuff. But, hey, at least it's based on GTK as opposed to QT or Qt or however you want to pronounce it, that KDE is based on. So, you're right there that there is some differentiation between those two desktop environments.
I did, before we go on, Unity has a 2D version.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this is just a little bit off track, but someone told me it was written in Qt, and you really can't tell the difference. I mean, there's some minor differences, but apparently it's a lighter version of Unity, and it's written in not GTK, but Qt.
Yeah.
So, and I thought that was pretty interesting. I mean, I'm probably wrong, and feel free to say you're wrong, but I accidentally logged into Unity one, the 2D Unity, and I'm like, it looks almost the same, but something wasn't exactly right.
Yeah.
Until I finally figured out, oh, I'm in the wrong one.
But, yeah, well, all of this innovation around desktop environments, whether it's Windows or whether it's Linux or whether it's Ubuntu or Linux Mint or GNOME or KDE, I think it's all good because it helps improve the overall interaction between human being and computer. It can be very disconcerting for people when there is change, and that's what we're hearing, is a lot of resistance to change. And I think that the initial reaction to Ubuntu's Unity was because of the drastic change. I think GNOME 3 was about at the same point and the same level of change for people. But distributions like Linux Mint will, through their extensions, help to bridge that transition so people can get used to it. So I think we will eventually all be using our computers very differently in the future. But with at least Linux Mint, they're making an effort, and there are other extensions as well that maybe we should talk about. But before we do that, some of the key differences that people will notice between GNOME 3 and GNOME 2, just generally speaking, is three of them. There is a top panel that shows the current focused application, not the window. That's number one. Number two, the notification area and the icons are on the top, unlike Mint 11, but just like they are with standard GNOME 2. And the third thing is that some settings and functions are in different places in the menus than they were before. And we can get into some details around that. But before we do that, the Mint GNOME Shell extensions are not the only extensions that are available for GNOME 3.
They're not.
And tell us a little bit about that. I know you've brought a link to our show notes.
I did. And the first thing I do once I install a distribution that's using GNOME 3 is, of course, I update it and get all the new stuff. And then the second thing I go to it's called https://extensions.gnome.org, and it is in the show notes. Mm-hmm. And there, you use your Firefox browser and you go down and you pick what extensions that you, want to add. And a lot of times it'll have a picture and show you what it does. Some of them do, majority of them do, some of them don't. But a lot of times you can figure it out. But Larry, it is the slickest thing because you click install and a little pop-up comes up and says, do you want to install? You hit install and all of a sudden it just works. It's awesome.
Yeah, you know, I was trying that out as well, and it actually doesn't say install. It says on and off.
That's right.
You click on and it offers to install it. And then once you've got it installed, on the web page, the on-off switch actually allows you to turn that feature on and off. It's really cool. And of course, it shows up in the advanced settings under Linux Mint as well as an extension. But the fact that you can control it from the website is kind of a nice little whiz bang feature.
Well, you know, I don't know if it's different because when I was adding it to the Fedora distribution, I was running Fedora 16, it says it pop up and says install.
Oh, really?
And then I click install, and then it comes up and says on or off.
Oh, okay. Well, I was on Linux Mint 12 when I was looking at it, and I tried it in both Firefox and Chrome browser, the Chromium browser. And when I go to the – let me just go to the link right now. Let me see. From Google Docs, I have to control-click, I think. Still didn't work. Oh, there it is. They changed the behavior again. Thank you, Google. Okay, so shell extensions. When I open one, let's take a look at this activities button text right at the top. And the icon to the left shows on off.
Then it must be already installed.
No, I didn't install it.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
Well, I wonder why I get a different, you know,
maybe it's just the difference between the way GNOME is implemented in Fedora versus the way it is in Ubuntu/Mint.
But it is very similar, so you're not going to have any problems.
Yeah, exactly. And so they have quite a long list of extensions, some of which I have picked up on and installed.
I will say there's extensions that I recommend for everybody. They're called the Flippery. That's a strange name. It's not as good as Mutter, but Flippery has where you can move the clock over. You can add a bottom panel. You can get it pretty close to what Linux Mint does, but I will say Linux Mint has it nailed.
Yeah.
It's not quite as good.
I noticed those Flippery ones in there as well, and there is some overlap between the Mint GNOME Shell extensions and these extensions. And I personally like the way Mint has implemented it, but some of these have a little more flexibility than even the Mint ones do. So it's personal preference at this point, I think, is you can choose which one works best for you, turn off the others, or even uninstall them. And in fact, on this website, if you click on installed extensions, it shows you not only the ones you've installed from this site, but it shows you the Mint GNOME Shell extensions as well, and allows you to turn them on and off from the website or uninstall them as well. So it's quite a useful site, and thanks to the GNOME folks for this.
Yeah, when they originally put GNOME 3 out, I heard that they were kind of resistant to have extensions. But apparently once they saw how useful they were and what people wanted, they a whole ecosystem has just popped up of people writing these extensions. And I think Mint was probably one of the driving forces in that, because they're like, wow, look what Mint has done and look at the popularity. Maybe they're onto something.
Yeah, and I really think the GNOME 3 team and community have really stepped up with extensions to help you get back some of the functionality you've lost in going to GNOME 3, because GNOME 3 is, let's face it, at still early stages of its development, and it's taken a long time for KDE and GNOME 2 to get to the point where it's really full-featured, and it'll take a while before GNOME 3 gets there as well. But they're gradually adding those features back in and adding some new ones as time goes on as well.
I think the future for Mint and the GNOME 3 and all the extensions is really bright. I really think there's a future behind it. I know that when they first put it out there, everybody was, you know, kind of like, this is totally foreign to us. But as you said, it's still new, and then all of a sudden you've got all these new extensions being written and adding back functionality. So I'm really impressed with what they've done.
Yeah.
I'm really impressed how Linux Mint has attacked the problem. And you know, if nothing else, we should say great work, Clem and team, and the GNOME Foundation. If without them, none of this would be happening at all.
Right. Well, and that's not the end of it. This may actually be a little controversial for Linux Mint as well. In January 2012, the Mint blog introduced a new direction for the Linux Mint desktop.
Oh,
it's
really?
It's called Cinnamon. And we'll include a link to that blog entry. It's still in very early stages, but here's what it says on that blog entry, just a couple of paragraphs.
Okay.
If you like Linux Mint, you'll probably like Cinnamon. Both projects share the same philosophy and the same vision of what a desktop should be. In this vision, the computer works for you and makes it easier for you to be productive. Things aren't hidden away, but easy to access. With easy-to-use interfaces, a familiar layout, advanced technologies, and principles you've already got to use in Linux Mint, you'll quickly find yourself at home. Configuration is also something important in Cinnamon as one of the fundamental goals to make you feel at home, thus giving you the ability to change the way the desktop works, looks, and behaves.
Ah. Well, I went and read the blog entry also, because after you had mentioned the Cinnamon, and I noticed the blog post also listed a few cool things they have already implemented in Cinnamon. And I'm just going to read a few of them if that's okay.
Sure.
One unique bottom panel, which you can auto hide and which location can be configurable in the future. A window list, which will have a show desktop button, a system tray icons, and all the features introduced in the MGSE.
And that's Mint GNOME Shell extensions.
A menu featuring the same layout as Mint Menu, with options to add applications to favorites, to the desktop, or to the panel. Custom panel launchers, a sound applet which lets you launch and control your music and switch your sound from your speakers to your headphones or vice versa. If you want to try out Cinnamon, the blog post has instructions on how to install it.
As you said, if you do want to install it to try it out, you can switch between it and, of course, the traditional GNOME 3 or whatever you want, Mate. On Mint 12, they have instructions on the blog post for you.
Larry, now that we've kind of did a view of Cinnamon from 30,000 feet,
yeah,
why would you think that this would be controversial? Seems like it'd be a great thing.
Well, yeah, it is. It is the right direction to go for Linux Mint. I mean, let's face it, with those goals, I think keeping things simple, keeping things flexible, going in that direction and keeping with the principles of Linux Mint is exactly the right thing to do. But the controversy may come from, okay, here's yet another desktop environment. We've got Unity, we've got GNOME 3, and we've got Cinnamon, and probably others out there. And that's not to mention things like LXDE and XFCE and KDE.
And KDE.
Yeah. Do we need another desktop environment? And quite frankly, from what I can see, at least at this point in the development, it seems to be still based on GNOME 3. It looks like they're making some basic fundamental changes to the way it operates in order to get these features without having to use extensions. So they're taking the whole extension concept and saying this should be part of the desktop environment or the user interface. So let's not use extensions, let's bake it in. And that's not anything I've read. That's just my personal opinion from observing how they've implemented and looking at the screenshots. But I would be hard-pressed at this point early in the development of Cinnamon to be able to tell the difference between what Cinnamon has and what GNOME 3 has with the extensions installed. They're very, very similar. The one key thing that I know is critically different is that custom panel launchers. If you remember in GNOME 3, you could right-click on the panel and add a launcher for all kinds of different things. If you wanted a CPU monitor, if you wanted to add, you know, a Firefox icon so that you had it in the panel so you could click on it because that's one of your favorite applications, the ones you use the most, you could do that. Well, with GNOME 3, you can't do that. You can add things like the CPU monitor through extensions, but you can't add just an application shortcut, for example. So adding that back in, I think that's the kind of features and the development that GNOME 3 needs for the future, to add that kind of additional flexibility and additional capabilities to GNOME 3. I think it will eventually come. And maybe what Clem is doing with Cinnamon is not forking GNOME 3, but rather providing some development that maybe can be upstream provided back to GNOME 3 so that they can incorporate it into their project. Again, assumptions on my part based on observation as opposed to anything I've read about or had anybody tell me about.
Well, I can tell you, I will say that this is not an assumption. The Clem and the Mint team are some talented folks.
That's for sure.
Wow.
So let's get back to the current release of Mint 12. One of the things that I was concerned with as I first started to use Mint 12 is some things seem to be in different places. So how do I find what I used to find in Mint 11 very easily? How do I find them in Mint 12? And so I've listed a few, and in the interest of helping out our listeners who are switching to Mint 12 for the first time, here's some of the common things that I found answers to. For example, where is the Mint control panel? So Mint for years has had a selection in the Mint menu that it was simply labeled Control Panel. And it took you to the GNOME Control Panel with some additional features added by the Mint team. It's not there anymore in Mint 12. Well, the way you get to those settings, they're not all collected in a single control panel anymore. First, you can click on the Me menu, that's your name in the upper right corner, and select System Settings right from there. You no longer have to mess through the Mint menu and go to Settings and System Settings and go through like three clicks. You just get them right there from the menu in the upper right-hand corner. So you can go there. That has most of what used to be in the control panel, but there are a few critical things missing. You click the Mint menu button or use the GNOME 3 menu to get to System Tools, and there you'll find selections for changing the desktop, the fonts, the shell, shell extensions, themes, and Windows. So those settings that used to be in the control panel are now under that advanced system or system tools or however it's labeled. It's in that extra little section there. You have to go to a different place. So that's point number one. So point number two is, what happened to the Mint menu categories? When you used to click on the Mint menu, you had categories and there were some very nice favorite icons that you could put there, huge icons for your favorite applications. Well, that's all been supplanted by the GNOME 3 favorites on the left-hand side, but those favorites appear on the left-hand side of the Mint menu, but it's not quite so obvious about the Mint menu categories. They're still there. It's just not as in your face as it was before. So when you click on the Mint menu, let me do that right now. Right above, the first thing you see on the left-hand side are the favorites, and you can drag things around on those favorites. And whatever you put there also appears on the GNOME 3 favorites menu, so they are interactive with one another. But then there is a list of categories, which you don't notice it until you start scrolling over it. The applications in each category appear on the right-hand side. So it's there, it's just not as immediately obvious as it was in the Mint menu. So it's not really a change, it's just a different visual representation.
Did this kind of throw you off, or is it pretty, or did it take very long to pick up the differences?
No, none of this took much time to figure it out, other than hunting down specifically the settings. That's the one that took the most time, and it really didn't take a lot of time. I just had to figure out where it was. And quite frankly, they are in the places that you would expect them to be in other Linux distributions that don't have the Mint menu and the Mint setup, the things that the folks at the Mint project have done for you to make your life easier. They're just more standard GNOME than anything else. But for users of Linux Mint, it's been something you've been relying on, and it's unfamiliar to go to some of these additional places. So the other thing that might be expressed by a user as, why do my virtual desktops keep appearing and disappearing? And if you notice in the lower right corner of the bottom panel, you'll see that there are desktops listed there. And traditionally, Linux Mint has had 2. You can switch it to 4. And Ubuntu has had 4 sitting there. But with Mint 12, if you put something from desktop 1 over to desktop 2, suddenly there's a desktop 3 appears. And then you can put something on desktop 3 and desktop 4 appears.
How many desktops can you have?
Well, I think there's a limit, and it may be a very large limit, but the way they've implemented it in GNOME 3 and in Mint 12 is, instead of selecting how many you want to appear or how many you want to have, as you fill one up, a new blank one appears. So you can add more up to the maximum limit. So it's actually quite handy, because if you have, let's say, 3 desktops with Windows on them, and of course a fourth one will appear as a blank one that you could add things to, if you take all the Windows off of desktop 2, it will snap back to showing 3 instead of the 4. So you'll have the 2 that you have Windows on, and you'll have a blank one.
Oh, okay.
So let's see, what else have I got on the list here? Virtual desktops, we talked about. Okay, and the last one.
The CompuZoom.
Yeah, in GNOME 2, in the various Linux distributions where I've been using GNOME 2 for years, I would always install CompuZoom if it wasn't installed, if only to get the CompuZoom desktop Zoom.
I like that feature.
Yeah, there were quite a few other features I used, but the way it was implemented, I would hold down the super key and scroll my mouse, and I could zoom into any part of the desktop I wanted and then scroll back out. Very handy for showing someone across the room a button or a feature on a website or something like that, without having to have them, come on over here, take a look at my desktop. You could zoom in and show them without them having to get up off their comfortable chair. And it was also a very good usability feature. I'm sure there are folks with vision impairment that have some vision but need to have things zoomed in to be able to see them. And so in GNOME 2, you had the CompuZoom, and by default with GNOME 3, even with Linux Mint 12, I don't see a way, and if a listener knows a way, to enable this in CompuZoom in Mint 12, please let me know, because I'd love to have this feature back. I don't see a way to get that back. Now, what they do have is in the accessibility options, you're able to zoom in, but it's a one-step zoom. In other words, you're either zoomed in or zoomed out, and then the zoom follows the mouse. But what I found is on my wide screen, I can't actually have it follow the mouse all the way to the right-hand side of the screen. So there's a bug in there somewhere. So it actually doesn't quite work well. Mm-hmm. It does work, and you can enable it in the extensions by turning off the No Ally extensions. And the Ally extensions are the accessibility extensions. And those give you high contrast, zoom, large text, screen keyboard, visual alerts, sticky keys, slow keys, bounce keys, mouse keys. And they're accessible in the universal access settings, the accessibility settings. And what this No Ally extension does is turns on and off the accessibility icon on the upper panel, so you can switch easily between them and turn them on and off. And what I did for my desktop is I assigned that zoom feature to a key combination. So I've got Control-Alt-M that toggles between zoomed and unzoomed, but I still have that limitation that I can't really zoom over on the far right-hand side of my screen. So when I zoom, I have to put it on the left-hand side if I want to show something. So still not quite right. Still early days for GNOME 3. I'm sure it'll be fixed in the future, but it would be nice to go back to my infinitely scrollable zoom features that were in CompuZoom.
Let me ask you something, Larry. As you've used Linux Mint, have you found anything that needs some work?
Yeah, that's one of them. Yeah, there's a bit of an issue, and these are not necessarily Mint issues. These, I think, are mostly GNOME 3 issues. There is definitely a GNOME 3 issue with Skype. And with Skype, one of the features in Skype is you're able to do screen sharing these days. And yes, that comes in very handy when you're trying to show somebody something on your screen and it's interactive. In other words, you need to move the mouse around and show them how things work, for example. Well, with Skype, they've added that feature in fairly recently and made it available in Linux, in the Linux version of Skype. And it works fine as long as you're not full screen. But with GNOME 3 and full screen Skype screen sharing, it flat out doesn't work. There is no solution. I've looked on the Mint forums, I've looked on the Ubuntu forums, and I've looked in GNOME as well, and Skype, and it's an issue. They're working on it. It's not fixed. Live with it.
Okay.
The workaround I've used is I use TeamViewer, which of course is available for Linux, but it runs in a customized Wine environment. But hey, it works just fine, and it allows me to share whatever I need to share. So that's my workaround, but I use Skype a lot more than I use TeamViewer.
Yeah, well, I think Skype, we all use Skype.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just so good.
It is. Yeah, unfortunately, they're owned by Microsoft, but as long as Microsoft keeps supporting Linux with Skype, I'm okay. I'll keep using it. Point number two, I can't add applets to the panel. We've already talked about that. Mm-hmm. Maybe there are some extensions for some of those things, but it would be nice to be able to add whatever I want to add to the panel. I can't just drag a window from one virtual desktop to the next one like you could using the Compiz extensions and so on. So you could actually take a window, drag it to the right-hand corner of your screen, and it would flip over to desktop 2, for example. So that's not possible, at least yet.
There is a way to do it if you're just using the stock GNOME 3, and actually you don't drag it to the corner. You actually drag it over to where those virtual desktops are, and you just drag it right to the desktop that you want it to appear on.
Okay, I'm going to try it right now on Mint, and didn't work.
I did say GNOME 3.
Yes, I know, but hey, stock in GNOME 3. Maybe if we turn off all the Mint extensions, it'll work, but I'm not going to do it as we're flying at 30,000 feet here.
No,
Let's continue recording our podcast in confidence here. Okay, so point number three is there don't seem to be as many out-of-the-box options for desktop themes.
Oh, yes.
In GNOME 3, and that's a matter of time before that comes. But hey, I like my desktop themes. And hey, like I said, they will come. Next is Synergy doesn't work quite right. Synergy is that mouse and keyboard sharing program that allows you to use the mouse and keyboard connected to one computer to control as many computers as you want. So you drag the mouse from the right desktop, drag it over across the boundary on the left-hand side of the screen, and it pops over to the right-hand side of the screen on a second computer.
You use that a lot, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Okay, because you have two monitors.
I have two monitors. I don't need it on the same computer, of course, with two monitors. But when I have my work laptop sitting next to my personal Linux laptop, my work laptop, of course, runs Windows, I just use my Linux keyboard and mouse and drag the mouse over to the Windows XP screen and do my work over there and drag it back over to my Linux screen and do my work over here. And that works quite nicely when I'm doing work
at home.
That's
just handy.
It is just handy. But it doesn't work quite right under GNOME 3. And I think it's a GNOME 3 issue as opposed to a Mint issue. But I did summarize the problems for Clem on a comment. And it's actually issue number 21 for Mint Cinnamon on GitHub. Here's how I summarized it there. And so Clem was asking for a summary as to, you know, how this was interacting with GNOME 3 in order to fix it for Cinnamon. And here's what I wrote. I have not done the thorough testing you will need, but here are my observations about using Synergy version 1.4.5 on Mint 12 GNOME Shell with and without the Mint GNOME Shell extensions enabled. I have Synergy Server on this machine, Synergy Client 1.4.2 on an LMDE machine, and Synergy Client 1.4.2 on my Windows XP machine. So I've got three machines. With and without Mint GNOME Shell extensions, Synergy is confirmed connected from server to client and to both clients. With no windows open on the desktop, the mouse simply can't be moved from one machine to the other. So if you have nothing open, it won't move between the two machines. To get it to work, here's what I had to do. With Nautilus window open and positioned on the left edge of the screen, I can move the mouse to the client computer on the left, but not to the client computer on the right. With the Nautilus window positioned over on the right edge of the screen, I can move the mouse to the client computer on the right, but not to the client computer on the left. In other words, Nautilus has to be open and it has to be on the edge of the screen. in order for it to transition from the one computer screen to the other computer's screen. Now, of course, if you have your Nautilus window maximized, it'll work just fine, but that's kind of inconvenient. Especially if you have something like Firefox maximized on the screen, it's not going to work. So you have to work a little carefully. It is definitely a bug, and as far as I can tell, it's a GNOME 3 thing. But I put a note on here as well. I haven't tried this exhaustively with different applications, but in my testing, only Nautilus appears to enable Synergy when configured to touch the edge of the screen through which you must move the mouse cursor. I've tried Firefox and Audacity so far, and neither one of those exhibits the behavior that it allows Synergy to work. It appears to be tied to the file manager for some reason, to Nautilus, but I'll let more keen minds than mine figure this out. I'm just making some observations here.
Wow.
Yep. So some niggly things, but hey, they'll eventually get fixed. And there are some workarounds, like I said, but that's my take on Mint 12 with GNOME 3 and Mint Shell extensions.
Well, Larry, that was a lot of information. And so you're still liking Mint 12, though?
I am. Like I said, those few little niggly things I found some workarounds for and some extensions to give me what I'm looking for, like the Alt Tab. I found on the GNOME Shell extension a nice little extension that allows you to do a cover flow type flipping of the windows as you go through the Alt Tab, which is, that's the kind of animation that I like. That's why I used CompIz before.
So Larry, is there anything else you want to add about Mint 12 before we move on to the software picks?
No, and quite honestly, Bill, I don't have a software pick. I think the GNOME Shell extensions would be my software pick. I like them a lot.
Well, I tell you what, I have enough for both of us.
Yeah, okay, go. Okay. Go for it.
Actually, I'm going to say Google Docs.
Yeah.
I know it's not actually an application. It is, but it's based in the internet. But I've been using that with you and Tom and a few other friends as we work on documents together, and I just think it's just neat.
Yes.
You can be in California, I can be in South Carolina or wherever, and we can work on the same document in real time. And it's a cross-platform, works on Linux, Mac, Windows. Yes, we did say the Windows word. So, but then I've had people come and tell me, said, you know, I've gone to Linux, but I can't get any good music. You know, I don't have the iTunes store.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
but I found two that I thought that are really well. I've used both of them. The first one is available for Windows, Mac, and Linux. It's called the Amazon Music Store. Okay. And the other one is just available for Ubuntu, and it's called the Ubuntu Music Store. And like I said, I've used both of them, and they have all the music that you would get from iTunes, but there's a really nice thing. It's all DRM free. So you can move it from your, if you bought it and you want to move it to your MP3 player, you want to move it to another computer to listen to, you don't have to worry about it not working.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great for folks who listen to a lot of music and want a nice variety of music. Very good software picks. Thanks, Bill.
No problem.
Okay, and I guess that wraps it up for today's episode. In our next episode, we'll have another listener feedback episode. Until then, you can go to our articles and show notes at goinglinux.com for more information, detailed instructions, screencasts, and illustrations.
You can email us with comments, questions, and suggestions. And remember, if you have a topic you want us to cover on a show, use our forums to leave your topic suggestion in a thread labeled Topic Suggestions. And the link is in the show notes.
Okay. You can also send us an audio comment by email. We'll play it on the show. Our email address is goinglinux@gmail.com. And our voicemail line is 1-904-468-7889.
You can follow our show updates on Twitter and Identica. We're going Linux.
You can download our episodes from our website, or you can use the HTML5 player or the Flash player to play them right there on the show notes page. Until next time, thanks for listening.
Talk to you later, 73s.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.